call from Hollywood, California, the whore capital of the world, the Boulé brothers, creatures of the night.
Hello, darlings. Yes, of course we have a reservation. The name is Boulé. We will be checking in this evening for an extended stay because we plan on never checking out of the haunted hotel. Hello, uglies, and welcome to the newest post-mortem episode of the Boulé Brothers Dragula, Season 5, Episode 3, The Haunted Hotel. Joining me now, as always, is my sister in darkness, Drakmorta. Drakmorta, how are we today?
I'm great.
Waiting for your on-ramp?
Well, here it is. Well, I don't know. Let me you had some speech ready. I was like, when am I coming in? Late check-in.
Extended stay, late check-in. I warned them you'd be coming in late.
I'm here, and I love the Haunted Hotel theme. I'm so excited to talk about this episode.
Me too.
I don't like to show the episode to anybody now. I'm like, I don't want to hear what you think about it.
What do you mean? Even the fans?
Yeah, I don't want them to see it. I want to just put it on the server and hide it and just watch it every once in a while when I'm in the mood. Don't talk about my masterpiece.
Oh my God, yes. Oh God, this floor show is a masterpiece. I love, with a capital L, love this floor show. Even though I know I said last week Trash Can Children was one of my favorite floor shows of the season, legitimately, The Haunted Hotel is actually maybe my favorite.
Me too. And everyone seems to be loving the episode so far, which makes me very happy.
Mm-hmm.
Something I wanted to talk about from last episode is JK.
Okay.
Because we brought JK back on episode 2.
Right.
And it's funny to see the reaction to it. Because at first, I felt like on episode 1 at the end, people were like, well, and this is some people, you know, I don't know. It went from like, oh, it's sad that JK went home too. I'm not really sure JK should have went home. In fact, JK shouldn't have went home. JK was robbed, blah, blah, blah. Then JK comes back and they're like, I can't believe that they brought back JK. I can't believe it. This means like, no, it doesn't matter who's, I'm just like, Jesus Christ, you know? Mm-hmm.
It's like you can't win.
You cannot win. But I think, obviously, it was a good idea that we brought back JK, as you'll learn from watching this episode.
Yeah. And something I think people forget, it's our show.
I know.
We do what we want.
Just trust us, okay? We're here to entertain you and to make an entertaining show. It's not going to be straightforward. You're not going to be able to guess what happens, and that's why it's entertaining.
If you're not excited about this crazy horror drag roller coaster we've created, just unlatch your safety device and jump off the side, because this ain't the ride for you.
Wait until we're about to go upside down and unhook yourself.
Exactly.
But do it in a way so that as you're dropping, when the cart comes back around, we run you over.
Yeah.
And it's like splat.
Love it. Absolutely.
Anyways,
love it.
One other thing I wanted to talk about too from our last postmortem before we go into the next one is the rumors regarding who was the 12th contestant.
Oh, right.
Because I heard some stuff in the office that I was like, I mean, crazy wild stuff that I'm like, what the hell? I just want to put it out there for everybody. None of what you're hearing online, if what I'm being told is really what's out there, none of that is real. The real story is very simple and not dramatic, unfortunately. I wish it was dramatic, but it's not. And you would never guess who the person is, but I will give you one more clue. It's someone who has been on TV before. That's
Ooh,
all that I will say.
That's a spicy clue.
But that's all I'm going
to
say.
That's a shady thing to say, bitch. Giving you a little Cynthia doll. Yeah, and one thing that we did this week in the time between episodes 2 and 3 is we actually kind of got together with different groups of friends and watched the episode.
Which I don't always like to do.
No, I don't like to do it either, because you know what? At this stage of the game, when we're in post-production, like, we've seen the episode more times than anyone would ever, the biggest fan would ever watch. When they're like, I watched this episode 8 times, I'm like, congratulations, Diva. I watched it 800 times before it even aired.
You're like Satana and JK. I watched it 10. I watched it 12.
I'll do it 11. Exactly. I think it says a lot too, because we were like, yes, let's go to, you know, this person's house and watch with all these people. Then the next night we were like, oh, let's go to this person's house and watch with all of these people. I think it's testament to how much we actually really love this season and how good it is. And it's been so fun to watch people's reactions, because people are really taking the signals from the show and like from the editing and the personalities, whatever it is, the looks, like people are really excited about it. And it brings me kind of like a special little joy when I see that in audiences.
I agree. We used to go to viewing parties back in the day, like in drag, and kind of, and host them every once in a while and stuff. So I don't know. Maybe it could be fun to do that again down the road, but not this year. I'm not in the mood. Like I said, I don't want anyone to watch it. I do. I want them all to watch it, but you know what I mean. Like, it's kind of like it's your baby, right? Like, you want everyone to watch it and everyone to have feedback, but at the same time, you don't.
Right.
You know?
You're only allowed to tell me how smart, beautiful, and talented my baby is.
Well, it's
if you have something else to say, just keep it to yourself.
It's the details of stuff that I always get amazed that people catch. It's like, you know, like something big and dramatic will happen on that episode. Mm-hmm. But like suddenly there'll be like 300 people talking about like a light bulb in the boudoir or something. Like, it's just weird to me, like what sticks with people. But the same thing happens on Housewives. I told you the other day there was like some giant dramatic episode and no one was talking about what the drama. They were talking about that this lady's stove was too small in her and they were going off of it. Why is her stove so small? What could it be?
That drives me up a wall. How it sparks, right? It sparks like a little fire, and then comments are like, there's like a million.
It's crazy. I mean, people love the show, and that's why we put it out there. So good. I'm glad people are talking about it. It just means they're fans and they're enjoying it. So I'm glad that they're seeing it and talking about it, and they're that invested in an eyelash.
Same. Ooh, and on that note, we are going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we will be diving into episode 3 of season 5 of the Blade Brothers Dragula, The Haunted Hotel.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
We are back. Welcome, everyone, back to the lobby of the Haunted Hotel. I see we have a very late check-in joining us right now.
Oh, my God. You don't understand. The elevator wasn't moving, and I had to grab all the bags, and I raided the minibar, and then, you know, the housekeeping was there, but I'm here. Hi. Hello. Greetings.
I was wondering why you requested that weird room in the basement that only has, like, a little twin-size bed.
Yeah, wait. The one right next to the laboratory.
Oh, wait. You're confused as to why I would want that very specific dirt? Dirty, dank room? Ooh, Israel.
He's like, you know, the lab. Start for a laboratory with the monsters.
A very specific type of monster. Yeah. Ogre, if you will.
The one-eyed snake trouser. No. One-eyed trouser snake.
Yes. Hello, I am the one-eyed snake trouser.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
All right, well, we have a lot to talk about, so let's get into this episode. So
I have my serious viewing goggles on.
So we're in the lab and the surviving monsters are there kind of talking about who they think is going to walk in the room next. Like, who has survived the trash can children extermination? And I think we get some cute little like foreshadowing here because we're like, look at Ork and Neo having like this little oogly boogly moment with their eyes.
Oh my God.
It's really cute.
It's super cute. It almost gives me my own sort of emotional extermination challenge, though. I'm like, oh my God, no, wait. Another love triangle. Just keep between the two of you. Just right. The two.
Seriously,
is fine.
No triangles. Yes, exactly. 2 points, a straight line connecting. We're not adding a third point here. No one wants it.
Stay tuned.
Nobody wants it. Oh.
I will say, I love the double muck mouth of the two of them. Orgotic has this just grime on his teeth during his talking at confessionals, yeah. And Neo is adorned with these red jewels. I'm like, y'all are grody together, and I love it.
Well, I mean, imagine if they were combined. So you had the brown, ooh, gross teeth with jewels on it.
Yeah.
Interesting. Sounds like my late checkout.
People were talking about Orgotic's teeth, and yeah, whether that was on purpose or not, which is hysterical to me.
They're like, oh, sister came on TV with a literal decayed yuck mouth. Like,
yes!
She came on with like piss yellow teeth. No, this is something that Orgotic puts on for the specifics of like their styling
to be gross.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he fought somebody. I saw him in an argument with someone online, and he was like, "Uh-oh, the dental Karens are."
Yay! Oh my god! Yes, organic. Get her, Jade.
Oh, I love it.
I was like, rule number one: don't fight people on the internet.
Oh, this was reminding me of Ian's comment about like Coco's tweet this morning.
Coco tweeted after the release of episode two. She goes, "Good morning, drag experts."
Just unprompted and unexplained, but it says everything.
Totally. It's my favorite thing about the show is, well, it's my favorite thing about air quotes fans of the show, where suddenly everyone went to drag school. Everyone is the number one drag artist in their town. They've been on TV and just bring it on.
I never understand their criteria for judging, right?
Oh, because it changes so rapidly.
People on the show are so different. Like, they will critique someone's like pads, right? But then they're totally cool with Orgotic, who doesn't wear a stitch of makeup, nothing, and they're okay with that. It's like, why doesn't she have to wear?
All drag is valid.
Well, but that's the thing. So is it or is it not?
Oh, yeah.
That's the weird part of it, right? It's like they allow some things and some things they don't. It's very particular.
Yeah. Well, here we are in episode three. And I think this is the point where competitors are starting to feel the pressure, right? Like people are going home and you've been working hard now for probably a couple of weeks between the promo and everything else. And they decide to let out like a primal scream, which I think is like kind of fun. And everybody just like lets it out.
Why is everybody always scream? I don't understand that. That happened on season four.
It's a release. I think it's like a release.
It's spooky. Yeah. It's a, you know, horror drag. Ah,
yeah,
boofy.
Oh, I do love that the primal scream summons Cynthia Doll from the darkness. I love it.
This sound doesn't sound like it. The sound Cynthia emits doesn't seem like it could come from a human. It's like,
yeah. So Cynthia comes in with her speech, which live.
Guns blazing, like double barrel, double fisted.
Everybody's wig is like kind of blown back a few inches. They're like, what is happening?
How many Red Bulls did she drink before she came in there?
Oh, the entire stock of them. Oh,
what they don't understand, and I don't think the cast understood this because this is only the third episode. Few of them had been up for extermination at that point. They learn that they did not go home about 5 minutes before they walk into that room.
Yeah. Literally,
so that's
minutes.
A little BTS for fans to know.
It wasn't like that every season.
It was not.
That's the way we decided to do it this season. And there's like an intensity and also like a reality to you've just been saved into that room.
Right. You know, we really want to try to preserve as much of the reality as possible. So they really do not know who went home until 5 minutes before they walk into that room on a completely different day. So, you know, I think that's why she was probably as hyped as she was compared to when people normally come in.
All the reactions are 100% genuine at that point. Like, it reminds me, we're on episode three, but when Satana's face crack happens, when JK walks out, I'm like, this is why we do this. This is real.
It's hard to do. It's hard. I think a lot of reality shows have to fake that because of just the mechanics of production. But I am a stickler. I'm like, I do not want them to know everything. Like, keep people in separate parts of the building and all that. So you're seeing their natural reaction. So I think everyone was a little blown back.
But I think universally, everyone was very excited to see Cynthia return to the cast.
Much.
And she's four or five, still alive. And we get our challenge issuing. And this one is really interesting because it is kind of chock full of surprises and twists.
Oh, and little foreshadowing nuggets for the future, too.
The challenge is so cool. The Haunted Hotel. And this is a challenge we wanted to do for a couple of seasons.
Yeah.
And it just seemed to fit perfectly into season five's list of challenges. But we also talk about that there's going to be a lip sync. And I think a lot of people probably thought it would be a joke. Like our favorite song from 1913. But it literally is
it
our
is,
favorite
yeah.
song. How long have we loved this song?
A long time. If you're going to be a guest at the Haunted Hotel, you're going to do music from that time period. So.
Yeah.
And then Coco... First time our extra sister, Coco, has arrived. So we crown Coco as the extra sister of Dragula on the tour. But obviously people who are watching the show were not all at that tour stop or did not see that online. So they're being introduced to Coco as the extra sister for the first time. So what does extra sister mean?
I think this is up for interpretation, but for us, it's almost our version in a way of the Miss Congeniality. Like a person with personality who's made such an impact on the show that we almost see them as an extension of the Boulay Manor staff. Like someone who is in our family that we might see once, twice, maybe even more, like season after season, and embrace into the family.
Yeah, I think so too. It's someone that had just a massive impact on the show. They didn't snatch the crown in their season, but Coco's been there multiple seasons, and the fabric of Coco is sort of woven into the Dragula mythos now.
Absolutely. And what a good job she did. Like, oh, so with God, the look, yeah. It was like, style yourself, do what you want. You know, we trusted what she wanted
trust
to do,
a big thing,
and what she wanted to say. And that can be intimidating because all of it was, you know, kind of improv and self-scripted. And I thought Coco did a tremendous job.
Yeah. And Coco is incredible. And I even think about coming off of Titans and going on tour, and Coco literally, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, on tour would build new looks and new wigs every night. Every night at the meet and greet would have a different look, different wig, styled. She would come on the tour bus and style it up and everything. It was so impressive.
Yeah.
I love that Coco did that because it was amazing for the fans, but also it was kind of amazing just sort of if there's the secret show that gets filmed just through our eyes.
Totally.
Just the way that everyone, I'll say, would just react to, oh, what's Coco doing? Making a brand new wig. What are you doing? Sleeping.
Yeah.
Love. She looked amazing on this episode.
She did that really even good. On season 4, after she was exterminated, she would be on set in the workroom on days off and stuff, just making full-ass outfits out of nothing.
Oh, yeah.
So incredible. So that's why Coco deserves to be the extra sister of Dragula.
Exactly. And we're running a game of chance here to see who will get our haunted hotel room key upgrade. And that key has a lot of power. I mean, the face cracks when we were issuing the challenge and people, oh, you could save yourself. Amazing. Oh, you could save somebody else. Wow. Interesting. Or put someone out for extermination and they were in the ground. They were like, oh, my God, I could be targeted even if I do great. And like, what a deadly twist.
Totally.
And Coco, who probably might be the only person that I would allow to boss Israel around, sort of the way that we do, because I was rewatching the episode, she's like, Israel, and like called him out, and he like wheeled out the keys, and I'm like, that's correct.
Totally. And Israel looked good.
Yes,
little,
he did.
A little snack for the fans.
Ian would boss them around sometimes, but then they would just start bossing each other around, and it started to get weird.
Israel and I have a new appreciation for each other. I feel as though it's best when I give Israel what she wants and what she needs, and what she wants and needs is just, you know, just pat her on the titties a little bit, tell her she looks nice, and she does. I'm like, Israel, no more claws. Love you, sis.
100%.
Right.
Well, we had one lucky ghost with the most on this Fright Feet challenge, and Jarvis ends up winning the upgrade key, and we'll see how that comes into play a little later.
Yes, I love when Jarvis gets the key, and immediately Blackberry is like, hey, Jarvis, my good pal, my friend, I'm like,
do you need anything? Anna's like giving side eye.
I love it. I'm like, Blackberry to me is like the sleeper comedian so far. I love it.
Yeah, because Blackberry seems super preoccupied that Jarvis might. And I was like, why? What are we not
seeing? She was all paranoid about the porta potty too. Like, it was like, that porta potty is like getting to me, girl. Like, I need room. Like, she was like really sweating through it.
It's interesting because, you know, we talked last episode about the game that gets played, and everyone plays the game differently. And I think that Blackberry maybe is looking at this like, I know what I can do, I know what I can deliver, and I don't want to get knocked down a peg because someone else is playing the meta game. And it's smart. And I think that the way that she does it is fucking hysterical.
I don't know. I think if I was competing on the show, I would want to get all those things, and I would want to just like cause chaos. You know?
Ooh,
I would want to
do things. Chaos.
Right? I would want to just keep it interesting because I would feel unsafe when it's safe, because when it's safe you sort of can predict, you're like, this person's strong, you can kind of almost guess where are people gonna place, and I would want to mess that up. I'd be like, I'm gonna just get Neo out of the competition today.
I think that's what Jarvis tried to do. Like, I think it's under the guise of like, this is cute, cariño, I love you, and like that, but I'm like, you're trying to gun knock out one of the heavy hitters.
Yeah. Jarvis is smart, especially after the sort of middle of the road critiques that Jarvis gets in this episode. I think that the way that he played the key, I'm very happy with that.
Right. So let's talk about Neo. We learn a little bit more about Neo in this episode in the workroom.
Yeah.
She has a moment where she's upset and she's talking about how she talked to her family and everyone's reaction to that. I was very happy to see this on camera and to see Satana and Fantasia sort of embrace her and talk to her about it and relate to her, because I think so many queer people can relate to this moment. Not necessarily that everyone's trans, but that the idea that, you know, your family doesn't necessarily know everything, or there's a lot of young queer people, I think, that experience that daily.
Yeah. I mean, unless you're a very special person with a very special like childhood, you grow up under the guise of only like part of yourself showing. You kind of hide so much of who you actually are. And it isn't until you move away, for a lot of people, for me, and discover, this is actually, I'm going to express myself in all these other ways. And you even discover new stuff about yourself, sometimes late into your teens and your 20s, and sometimes people later, and sometimes never, if you end up staying closeted. This crushed me to hear that coming out was so difficult, because I know it can be difficult for people. I was very scared when I did it, but that Neo regrets it.
Yeah.
That part just really kind of put a knife in my heart.
I felt like that a little when I came out. When I was younger, and people would always be like, you have to come out, it's such a great moment. And you'd see all this propaganda, remember, back in the day. And I was like, maybe it's true. My gut tells me no, but maybe it's true. And I did it. And I was like, I was talking to Swan about it at the time, because we knew each other then. And I was like, that was the stupidest thing I ever did. I was like, that was a hot mess. I was like, you lied. It was not embracing.
No, I'll own it.
Okay,
the day before, I was like, you really need to do this.
It was
I'm
bad.
Like, you'll feel better.
It was bad.
But look,
remember.
And how is it now?
Well, now it's good. But it's like, yeah, exactly. You're right. But at the time, I mean, I come from a very different family. And I can relate to Neo a little bit. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm a traditional Chinese family. Clearly I'm not.
Wait, you're not?
I'm not coming out of the closet second time.
Oh my God.
Yes!
But, you know, it was very like, you know, my family did not. They just, no. But with Neo, I think this is even more interesting, the cultural differences.
Yeah.
Because it is very true. I have a lot of Chinese friends, and I know what their families are like and what their beliefs are like. Mm-hmm. And even if they sort of accept you, and this isn't universal, I want to put this out there, but they ain't going to talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
They will tolerate your ass, and they will be warm to you, but they don't want to know the details.
That's why I really appreciated the way that Fantasia sort of took that conversation, because I think Fantasia's insight is you have to do what is best for you. Because I think that Fantasia also knows, you know, coming from her own background, that your family, they may not be happy, they may not like it, but ultimately you have to do what is best for you. She talks about, you know, people are telling me, don't get your tits done, don't get this done, but look at where I am now. And I think, yes, maybe Fantasia is a little bit of the swan being like, yeah, girl, just do it. But yeah, I think what you said is true. There's so much now of kids being like, oh, just come out, everyone come out. And I'm like, you don't have Asian parents.
Right.
You don't have
it's
Asian
true.
Grandparents. Like, right. You just don't know.
It's very true. But I will say this, and this is something that develops in the future, but it's something to think about with Neo as a performer in the public space. She doesn't know yet how much that is actually affecting her.
Yeah.
And it is affecting her, but in this moment, she doesn't realize that. Us being like a little older than her.
A couple
just
years.
Just a few years.
I mean, well, I'm just like months maybe.
You know, I've seen that with people, and I've seen that, you know, we've been through this on the show with people that, you know, are out as queer people. Erica was in a similar position in season two. And just sort of how it gets to a point where I think it's like, it doesn't matter about your family. It matters about you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? Fantasia talks about this. And I also love that moment with Fantasia and Satana kind of nurturing Neo. This is a great example of like chosen family.
Yeah.
Even though they don't know each other very long, we can see common threads between us, and they come in and they support where support is needed. But I loved what Fantasia said. Like, sometimes you need to step away and out of your family's influence so that you can like strengthen yourself in order to be able to step back into their influence. Because it isn't always the nicest place to be. Like, hurtful things are said. You can be made to feel like an alien in your own body and in your own house because of the way you grew up. You know, so you need to really strengthen those barriers so that when you step back towards your family, you can stay who you are without feeling guilt or shame and all the wonderful things they love to put on you.
But I don't think you can get over that stuff until you embrace it yourself and blast it out there and deal with the uncomfortability of it. That's what I believe.
Yeah, or put on like a really, really big wig and a ton of makeup and some high heels and just get out there and blast it out.
Honestly, it's like an X-Man, an X-Woman, an X-Person. I don't know, the Dr. Xavier's school for X-people. Like, you have to just come into your power, and then you can go visit your family. And if they don't like it, then you just mind blast them to death and just blow them up.
I think Neo should go in front of her parents' house and put on like that Shangela track. What is it?
Working
professional.
She's a professional. Do the whole thing with the drop and the wig. Just do that.
Damn.
And then from there on, it can't get worse. Right? That is the queerest thing she could ever do. And then everything after that will seem like more mild, you know?
Yeah, well, that's actually part of the coming out package of 2023. It's just you send your family the track and you just start, hallelujah, and then you just, bam.
But I will say, about this now, but the truth is where Neo is from, and I'm not going to talk too much about it, I don't want to give away anything, it is not acceptable. It is dangerous. It is actually dangerous. So I feel like people come up, you know, us in our culture ignorantly are like, you should come out, you should do this, you should do that. It's like, sometimes you shouldn't, because your ass could get killed, you know, and it's not safe everywhere.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, the Neo moment was poignant and powerful, but it wasn't the only moment that we had in this laboratory section, because JK and Throb kind of exit to the cauldron for their own little after school special moment, as JK put it. Like, let's see what bullshit we're going to have to deal with right now.
It's interesting that Throb stepped forward and would sort of be a shoulder for JK, I think. Yeah. I thought that was cool to see him do that.
Same.
You know? Because I wasn't sure where he was coming from at the end of last episode. Mm-hmm. It kind of rubbed me the wrong way when he was like, don't talk right now. I was like, I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, why are you doing that?
I know, but I mean, I
understood it. Yeah.
I did too. And other people, when we watched the episode with other people, they were like, oh, I get it. And I think that
Throb's trying to shield JK a little bit, almost save JK from himself.
Yeah.
Right?
I think there's something triggering just about telling someone not to speak.
Don't talk.
Yeah.
Totally. It was like, that's a spicy way to put it.
Yeah, totally. Well, and it also comes off of Throb's win, which JK sort of brings up and is like, okay, I will take your advice, but you in turn have to take mine, which is, I will be a little less intense, maybe. I'll stop pushing people's buttons, but you have to celebrate yourself. Because that's the thing.
Yeah.
We all were like, Throb, you won the challenge.
Literally. And they literally shrunk down and knelt behind the couch. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
I think they probably know now, the competitors get it now, when I'm like, show us your reality. Mm-hmm. This is what I mean. I don't mean go into the boudoir and fight somebody. That's not what I mean. I mean, show me your vulnerability. Like, because other queer people in the world will see this stuff and relate to it. I think it's interesting that Throb is as hard as they are on themselves and as meticulous with the detail, but can't accept the win.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Like, let's talk about that, you know?
Yeah. Well, what did you guys think about the whole JK thing in general, right? And when I say the JK thing, I mean this kind of like perceived dogpiling and JK almost being positioned as the target, maybe from like almost the entirety of the cast.
Let's all talk about it. I'm going to start because I feel kind of strongly about it. I don't understand it. I do not understand it. And there's nothing missing. There's nothing that's not being shown that would explain, you know, like he did something and we're not showing it and it explains why everybody's not. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
Like, look, I've lived through Zava, right? Zava will come in the room and be like, snipe, snipe, snipe. I'm cutting all your heads off. I'm pissing on your corpse, you know?
Yep.
And it's funny, but it's like, JK's not doing
that. Love you,
that.
Zava.
JK's not doing that. So I don't understand the reaction. What do you think, Ian?
I think that it is a little bit of that Brooklyn energy we talked about last episode, but it also comes with JK did poorly on episode one. And then, you know, Zava came back in on episode two and had a really triumphant return. And JK sort of has like a middling episode in episode two. And I think that, unfortunately, it's not really JK, it's everyone else. They sort of see, oh, you were annoying episode one, and now you're a target. Everything that he says is sort of like, shut up, shut up. And even Throb is like, oh, he kind of reminds me of my little brother. He does have sort of annoying Calvin kind of energy, which I think it's almost like his passive ability if he's like a World of Warcraft character. Like, he sort of brings that to people and is like, hey, I can push your buttons without even talking to you.
Is it that the rest of the cast is so mild at this point in the competition that he seems to peak? Because even though to me he's not doing anything that crazy, maybe with this cast, that's the craziest someone's being?
It could be that. It could be that. There's not a lot of bristling, right, between the competitors. And I think JK maybe creates the most friction to people around them. there's no James Majesty or other big character to kind of clash against that. Mm. I think it makes them the most visible, right? And if you couple that with the idea that, like, maybe they didn't do the greatest in episode one, hi, you were up for extermination, or maybe you're showing in episode two, okay, you were safe, but like you were saying, you know, it's not putting you up in like, okay, you're a threat. Oh, you've proven why you should be here. So you're not only like maybe performing at a low level, you're also kind of annoying. You're annoying everybody with your comments. So I kind of get it, but I actually think it's unfair. You know, I think it's unfair that everyone is so vocal about it and has to point out like, oh, I think it should have been JK. Well, guess what, bitch? You're not the judge. There's only two people in the bottom and JK is not one of them. So the question was posed, who do you think should stay? And I think taking the opportunity to point their finger at JK was weak.
I agree with you. I do love this cast, but y'all was foul for that. Mm-hmm. So we have another big personality with Cynthia, who I love Cynthia. Baby, Hummus of the Fungus. She's fun. And Cynthia has sort of aligned herself as a beloved character with the cast. So you have sort of two big personalities. And one of them, not saying this is calculated, but you do have Cynthia sort of on the rise of like, oh, hi, I have lots of friends here. And so then the other big personality is JK. And I can see weird tectonic plate shifting with that.
Yeah.
I want to interject too that the cast might say, well, we're prodded to say, who do we think should go home? That is true. You're asked a lot of things on camera as part of the show. But your answer, if you're just picking the person everyone else is picking, it can be perceived as a little weak. It's easy because you don't really want to pick one of the two people that are up. Because you don't want to have static.
Right. Is it that dynamic that several of them talked about, which was like, you're trying to be nice. Yeah. You're just trying to play nice and nicey cutie and not, you know, point your finger at someone who could legitimately go home that night.
I don't like that excuse. A producer asked me. Of course they did. Right. You signed up for a show that you know exactly. We literally tell you 1,000 times. This is what's going to happen. You're going to be forced to tell your opinion constantly on camera. So I don't want to hear that excuse
ever.
This
is the show. This is what we do.
This is what we do. So
let's make some fucking good TV then.
So we exit that segment and we reveal our haunted hats that Drac just absolutely
Oh, we're going to talk about the outfits. Okay. Let's talk about these outfits. Okay. I hate this outfit. I hate this outfit so bad. Now listen, hire stylists. You know, a lot of hosts of shows hire makeup artists and stylists and all that. We don't do that. I do my own makeup every single episode, period. No one ever helps us with it.
Period.
And our outfits, we design them. We don't make everything. Sometimes we'll pay people to make our designs or whatever. This outfit was a collaboration.
Oh, okay. Big C.
An unsuccessful collaboration, in my opinion. I don't know what kind of haunted designing women from New Orleans person I was supposed to be, but I didn't like it. And you could probably tell from my mood, I didn't like it. Now, I think if I had gotten rid of the hat and put on a wig, which I wanted to do, maybe that would have fixed it. I hated the hat. I guess I really hated the hat.
You literally said in the episode where you're talking about Jarvis and their hat, and you're like, well, if my hat would have come off, I probably would have been feeling a lot better.
Yeah, I would have just been hilarious. Bald. I would have been like, let's do it.
But the makeup was good, though. I thought the makeup complemented it really well.
Yeah, we don't get to play around with the makeup very much because, look, we have like an iconic stamp brand.
Yeah.
Especially us as the host, we have to look very similar every episode. Yeah. So we don't get to play around a lot, but this one I thought it was fun to play around with the Dayglo makeup and stuff. It was fun.
Yeah,
I liked
agree.
The makeup. I did not like my hat.
Despite Drac's disdain for the hat, I felt cunty. I'm watching the episode and I'm like, bitch, you look good.
Yes.
It wasn't the hat. There was supposed to be a hat, but I don't know why it was straight up.
Well,
Drac,
if you want a hat,
down.
You gotta have a hat.
Yeah, but it was supposed to be laid
pull out
down.
A fucking
like,
fish.
Think like a disc on your head, like a fashion hat, not like what kind of like I don't
Martian
know
forehead telepathic disc helmet thing.
Anyways, I would have been up for I would have put myself up for extermination for that hat.
Well, actually, you might not have had to because our two guest judges who are featuring this episode might have put you up too. And they're both returning judges, people that we've seen before, and our very first reoccurring judge on any season of the show. So we had the lovely Tanana Reeve. I love her.
Yes,
I love her input. I love her.
Same.
Her the place of kind of like horror knowledge that she comes from and all of the ways that she contributes to the show. And Landon has returned, which I think is great to see.
Absolutely. Yeah, Tanana Reeve on a ghost challenge is perfect.
It's iconic.
Yeah, it is, totally. And also Landon. And Landon does one of my favorite Haunted Mansion looks, the Hatbox Ghost.
Yeah.
I love it. And he actually was going to do it on the episode, but legal was like, can't really do that. But I wish it, because it's so good. I wish people, you know, go on Landon's Instagram and look for it. It's really cool.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it's On to the Floor Show. We have returned, Uglies, and on to the Haunted Hotel Floor Show. We did tons of judging. Everybody knows what the feelings were from Tanana Reeve and from Landon and from all of our feelings about the performances. But did you have anything that maybe didn't make the cut or thoughts that you guys had about the show that wasn't shared on the episode?
I did, only in that I think it's hard to convey a live experience on TV sometimes.
Yeah.
So when you see a live performance, and you all know that being able to perform is important for us in choosing the next drag super monster, we come from a live performance space. I think sometimes it's hard to get the feelings that you can experience in person when you're watching it on a screen at home. There's charisma and stage presence and all these things that don't translate. People will tell you that, you know, if they act in a theater versus on a show or a movie, very different experience. So I think that that had a lot to do with our judging, and that may be something that people just
get confused about. I mean, I just want to take the moment to say, you know, there were so many great looks, as there usually are. This season is pretty fantastically stacked, but how talented our performers are.
Absolutely.
Like, our cast is really talented when it comes to what they can do on the stage.
It's very hard to judge. This was maybe the hardest floor show so far to judge. And so far, they've all been great.
Yeah.
But this in particular, everyone did well. I mean, honestly, it was nitpicky to decide who was on the bottom, and it had to do with performance. And the same with the win. The win was very influenced by the performer, and JK was parading all over that stage.
JK ate. Yeah. He ate. And watching the edit, I feel like y'all have really summed it up in terms of the difficulty of translating a live performance to a edited, filmed, digital space. However, when I watch this floor show back, I'm like, JK won. I think that JK did an amazing job. I love the little trinkets, too. Like, it just reminds me of James Majesty's look from the Wasteland weekend. Love some little details like that. And JK came out swinging. Really proud of him this episode.
100%.
It was also a lot about growth. That's part of the show, too. Yeah. When we give you feedback and you incorporate it, we reward that. And I think that that was something also that made JK stick out a little above the rest. I would say if there was a second place, it would have been Throb, for sure. Throb was close.
I thought Throb was so amazing that day, and I feel like Throb has some of the devil's DNA, because the details were beyond, like the bloody red-handed, like the jacket, the spirits, I mean, just the hair and the face, the makeup, the teeth, I mean, the smoke that came out of the collar. There were so many elements where I was pulled into this character and absolutely mesmerized, but it was that, like, where in the hotel do you fit in kind of thing.
Yeah, I was really happy that both Fantasia and Jarvis got a little bit of commentary, because I think, Drac, I think you say it, where it's like, it's difficult to be safe, because at this stage in the competition, if you're not growing and you're not getting feedback, then it sort of puts you at a disadvantage. And I also wanted to give Cynthia a little bit of a shout out, because I thought that she did really well too. Like, I thought that our safe crew this episode, like you said, Swan, everyone performed at a super high level.
Yeah, like, safe was like a...
Not
a dirty word at all, because Blackberry gave us so much character.
Yeah.
Cynthia gave us so much drama. Fantasia was giving us those Chanteuse vibes. I'm like, the staff of our haunted hotel has really filled out. I can imagine this place filled with these characters. Yeah.
And oh my God. Swan, you gave me my favorite comment of the episode. Oh, and I love those fags. And Jack's like, what the fuck?
Oh my God, did I say that? But yes. Now I know what you mean.
And of course, referencing Blackberry's cigarette box.
Yes,
not
the fags.
Just the fags.
I want to talk about, people were giving JK hell for the shoes that they chose to wear in that look, but I really liked them. I thought the color difference really kind of just set off the blue. All the kicking around and the way that he performed with the dance, those shoes really kind of like shined out
to me.
It
did. It felt like 1920s.
Yeah, it did, kinda, right? Yeah.
Wait, because I love that look. I love
the shoes. Okay.
I don't know the shoe thing. People need to let it go. Like, they're like, this is a biscuit or this is a that. Look, honey, there's a lot of different kinds of shoes and they're all cool. Like, again, it depends on what you're looking at.
And the drag experts.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there were so many undeniably amazing performances during this floor show. But JK really shined out, and that's what clinched the win. This was a performance competition.
Yeah.
And JK rose to the occasion.
The judges love JK the most. That's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So JK wins, and then we move on to Jarvis and the Key. And
yes.
We all know that Jarvis chooses Orgotic. Very proud of you, Jarvis. Good move.
Mm-hmm.
Out
Good
of
man.
Nowhere, too. I was stunned and impressed.
I love his delivery. I've seen people talk yes and talk no about Jarvis's character, but I'm here for it. I love a fully realized, it's a Jarvis, it's a Disasterina. I love that kind of, well, I'm going to pick you, my brother. I just love it.
I love it, too.
I do, too. Oh, we should talk about Anna, actually.
Yes.
Because Anna's performance was actually really good. However, the way that she created this performance was the last 25% of it was super entertaining with the gun and all that. And she presented it like it was a theatrical performance in which she was slowly building up to that dramatic moment where she shoots herself, which is super impactful. But it made the first 75% of the show kind of lackluster.
Drag. It's, no pun intended. It was a little slow. I do think if she performed this on a stage or in a theatrical environment, she would have had the audience in a chokehold. Mm-hmm. But I think for TV, we needed the bombastic storytelling maybe to explode a little bit because you have these characters around you that are bringing in 150% right from the drop. So
and I think
a risk.
She looked beautiful, but I think the stark white for a ghost, to me, I feel like you should look a little more aged, like stain some like off-whites and browns. And it was something I think Betty suffered from as well in her ghost ship glamour look.
It's a little too polished.
It's a little too bright and white, you know?
I see that, yeah. But somehow Neo's, I think, really works just because the brightness and the whiteness really underlines the bride and it contrasted so well with the blood. So, I don't know, a little bit of like...
Well, that Neo's wasn't an all-white thing, though, whereas Anna's was an all-white. The feathers were white. You know, everything was white. Skin was white. So I just felt like it was a little...
And you didn't see the red until the reveal of it, which I almost think was a little bit of maybe the opposite of Satana's issue with her performance.
And she also didn't have the same kind of slapstick that Neo had, where she had, like, Charlie Chaplin falling through a painting and broke a mirror over her
I'm
head.
Sure Charlie Chaplin is what she was going for.
Very clear reference.
Yeah.
100%. Let's contrast Anna's performance with Satana because I think Satana, you might be right, is a little bit of like the opposite approach, which is we've seen this before too, even going back to pageants in the club space where someone has a gag and it can be a great gag. One in particular comes to mind that we've seen before. They're on stage for like 5 seconds and they go ahead and do the gag real quick. And it's like, oh my God.
Just
hold it and build it a little bit. And then it can really kind of blossom and impact the audience.
Satana's.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking about the Dragula pageant where drag tried to rip this girl's wig off. And it was glued to her.
And she got her shit yanked so hard.
It was welded. To her head, and I was like foot on the shoulder pulling. I was like, come on. It was like a cartoon. I let go and it's like slaps back.
Wow.
But Satana's performance wasn't bad. You know, nobody performed poorly in this episode. It's just I felt that you could sense a lack of confidence in the presentation. It did not feel like she was comfortable on the stage. It didn't feel like she was confident. And it was sort of quiet, you know, like sort of meeker movements, you know, it just wasn't. And when you had someone like JK like flipping all over the stage and, you know, it just and who knows, Satana maybe on any other night of the week would have did a completely different show. It's just on that day in that particular challenge, her performance wasn't as strong as the other competitors.
It's true. And her prop was really interesting because it was a playbill that said, you know, Satana, the Boulay Brothers Haunted Hotel for one night only. Very cool. But it was small and ripped up and thrown so quickly, like right at the beginning of the performance. I think tons of people just didn't have a chance to register. What is this?
I know the judges didn't see it until later when we reviewed footage because it was too quick. It happened too quickly, which is certainly a mistake people make as performers.
Mm-hmm. Another mistake that's made over and over is assuming that rats love cheese because I don't know if they do.
Oh my
Note
God.
Note to self. I don't think they do. I feel very betrayed by my whole upbringing because every time you see a mouse in a cartoon or something, there's a cheese there. So yeah. I assume rats cheese. Love cheese.
You know what? On your behalf, I would like to speak to Mr. Charles Cheese, Chuck E. Cheese themselves.
Sitting on a piece of Swiss every time
on
you see
it. A throne of lies.
With the face sticking out of a hole of a Swiss cheese that you hit with a little hammer. You would think that they hadn't been lying to us this whole time, but they have.
That's a dairy glory hole, honey.
And let's just talk about this, like how well the rats were handled and treated, just so that everybody knows, like, we love animals more than we love people. We've said it before, and that still stands true today. The rats were so cute.
No rat was harmed in the filming of the extermination. I spent time with the rats. They were cute. I cuddled them. I petted them, and they were very happy.
They had fun.
And even though they didn't like the cheese, they liked the other treats that I gave them.
They were very well fed, I think, as evidenced by all the rat shit all over Anna.
I guess I should have thought about that before I gave them treats.
It's part of the extermination. It's a little filth.
This is an example of, like, some people get so freaked out by certain things. Like, some people are like, oh, rats, they're cute. I have them as pets. And some people are like, oh, my God, a rat's on me. I'm going to kill myself. You know, it's crazy. Same thing, like jumping off a bridge or a bug. Like, people just react differently to different stuff. Like that roach on Sigourney from season 4, crawling across her. Some people were just like, no.
Delete, girl.
I would have been one of them. The vacuum bed. People were so freaked
people were
out
so
by
triggered
that.
By that.
Oh, I love vacuum bed.
I was like,
I have a vacuum bed evolution for season 6.
I do.
I feel like it's. Like, good night. It's like cozy, just, you know? Again, you know, that's, people will be like, well, this wasn't scary or that one. I'm like, yeah, it wasn't scary to you, but the next one will be. Like,
to each their own. Yeah. And some of these exterminations are kind of qualifiers, right? There is no clear, like, air quotes, winner. If you can endure the rats, then you've proven that you are a bad enough bitch to stay. So now we have to take into consideration everything else. Your look, how you are, who you are. Are you competing on the same level as everybody else?
That was one of the things that came into play for this extermination and who we decided would go home was their vibe in the cauldron. It's odd. Zatanna, I felt like, the lack of feedback from episode 2 or how she interpreted the feedback from episode 1, I think she decided she was doing very poorly in the competition and kind of gave up. And I'm like, you're not.
A bummer.
You're not doing poorly. Like, and I think when you don't get feedback, your own thought about yourself and how good of a drag artist you all are, whatever, will come into play, right?
Sure.
So you're like, you're safe. One person's like, yay, I'm safe. And the other person's like, oh my God, I suck. I'm doing is terrible.
Yeah.
And I think she kind of got in her head and just decided she was doing poorly and gave up. You contrast that with Anna, who in the cauldron had a very positive attitude and was like, I get it. I'm excited though. I want to be here. I'm going to do this full blast.
I'm going
to
do whatever it takes.
You win
I'm
some, you
it.
Lose some.
Yeah.
That comes from experience and being a professional drag artist. And I think Anna's just been doing this for a while and like has taken the knocks of hard life, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Not to say that Zatanna hasn't, but I think Anna's been performing longer than Zatanna has in drag.
I think so too. And I loved attacking her with that axe.
Oh, the shining reference. Yeah. So good.
Yeah,
I
love that.
That was amazing.
Fun. Yeah.
Okay, prime example. Zatanna was great in that scene.
She really was.
Oh, Zatanna like acted her ass off in that scene.
I think it's the pressure of the competition. And
me too.
When the pressure is off, you can have fun and you can be yourself and it can be easy. But pressure makes diamonds too. So that's where the winners and like the finalists like really rise to the top.
I can't say it enough times and I've said it so many times. How you perform on this show is no indication of how strong of a drag artist or not you are. Mm-hmm. It's more like, what does it prove? It proves that when you're in an uncomfortable situation being filmed for many hours a day, you can rise to the occasion. Or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I hate when people think, well, they went home second or they went home first and they're terrible. That's not the case, you know?
It's just how the challenge landed, how they did that one day.
Yeah, it's a risk you take, because if you don't take the risk either, you know, you can get a lot from being on shows like this, obviously. There's a huge career you can build for yourself, and if you don't take the risk, you know, sometimes it can sort of not be very rewarding as a professional.
Yeah. I think there's a little bit of like responsibility there, right? Like as a contestant and a competitor, you need to realize this is my opportunity. My window is open. It will not be open forever. So you need to maximize and really capitalize on everything. Because some of them get spit out on the other side, and they think we should be promoting them for like years and years. Like, we are their managers.
I've never understood that
Me
part.
Me neither.
Yep.
Like, I'm not your PR. PR people get paid a lot of money. Managers, PR people, booking agents.
They get percentages.
I have to pay all those people lots of money. Nobody does that for me for free because I was on their show once.
Well, that's it for the Boulay Brothers episode 3 of season 5, The Haunted Hotel. But as promised, we are going to be moving into some listener questions. Ian, would you do the honors?
Ooh, I would be honored. This question comes from Luke from the real Terror in the Woods, Appalachia. Happy season 5, Boulay's and Ian in parentheses. As the Dark Lord of the Onyx Ondyx fan club, I was really interested to hear you discuss in the episode 1 postmortem how you got a disconnecting image slash brand from Onyx's promo look, entrance look, and floor show creation, and that factored into their placement on the premiere. From your perspective as judges and artists yourselves, how important is it that someone has a consistent image or brand that carries through all presentations of their drag? Is it possible for an artist to be too versatile or have their hands in too many baskets?
Respectfully, I feel like I answered this extensively on the show. Like, maybe more than anything I've ever said before.
I mean, you kind of wrote the book on it.
I don't know what else to say about it. I mean, I try to speak as clearly as I could about it. Yes, obviously, that's very important. When you're forming a branded TV star, a super monster of Dragula, it's important that we can pick you out of a lineup.
Yeah, and can you be too versatile? I don't know. I think you can do it the right way and the wrong way. So both can be true. You can be a branded, iconically stamped star who has a variety in the way that they present and what they look like and how they perform. It is important to know what this artist is going to deliver. Like Throb said something like that. I know of Onyx's work. They're fun and they're punk and they're cool, but I'm not sure what I'm getting. And I think that's the important question to answer.
Maybe if you have a big personality or you're comedic or something like that, that can sort of be your identity. And then you just do your looks and that's fine because your personality is always consistent. So, you know, I'm hiring this person. They have a big personality. They're going to crack these kind of jokes and they're going to do some shows. That's okay, too. But when you sort of are not giving us either thing, it's like you are being lost. I have no idea who you are.
Yeah.
Gabe from Nashville asks, with the last episode heavily alluding to Garbage Pail Kids, and as an avid collector of those cards, could we hope to someday see a collaborative series with all the monsters past and present? And, of course, the Boulays, and maybe an Atom Bomb equivalent of an Ian Rare card? Would love to see it.
I would absolutely love to do that. I think it would be a licensing nightmare.
So cool and so impossible.
Very doubtful.
Period. Brad from Boston has a question and an answer from a previous episode. Hello, Boulays and Ian. I have been curious for a few seasons now, but even more so since Cynthia Dole was banished to the Teletubby toilet bowl.
Yes, toilet bowl.
Toilet bowl. What exactly does it mean when Swan announces, attention competitors, the floor show is about to begin? We often see competitors freaking out mid-makeup, yet they all manage to serve incredible looks on the main stage. How much time elapses between the announcement and the actual start of the floor show?
Well, the alarm is real. The alarm kind of lets you know. It doesn't mean you have to immediately go do the floor show. Obviously, there's some time after. But it's like this is sort of like when you're in a theatrical production. This is your warning. That's really what it is. And like for me, if I had to judge it, I would say if the alarm went off, I would be comfortable if I had everything done except for my contacts and my nails and my clothes.
Yeah,
that's where they should be. So you can tell sometimes someone barely has foundation on. They should be scared.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just not that serious. We like to see people freaking out.
But there is a time. The time limit is real.
This is the second part. This is the answer to the question from a previous episode.
Listener answers.
Listener answers, starring Brad. Brad. Also, I've finally caught up in all past episodes of Creatures of the Night, and I have an answer to Drax's question posed on the, oh my god, October 19th, 2022 episode about whether there are obscure Marthas, quote, like a St. Patrick's Day Martha. I can assure you that there is an army of St. Patrick's Day Marthas living in South Boston, and they go wild every March with decorations, leprechaun costumes, way too much beer, and even green glitter. Absolutely horrifying.
I love it. Oh, my God.
Of course it's in Boston. I love it. It's so good.
I wonder if they serve, like, what is it, like corned beef and cabbage, and it's like a whole thing.
Yes. But they do green beer, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's true. Actually, Weren't we there for some reason?
I'm a New England queen, and there were always green beer parties around St. Patrick's
Day. What's the most obscure, though? Like
Arbor Day.
Arbor. No, if there are Arbor Day Marthas
in California, got to be somewhere.
That's amazing.
Reveal yourselves. Reveal yourselves.
Say their name.
Send us the photos and everything. Oh, I want to know.
This question comes from an unnamed person saying, "Hello, my glorious mothers of darkness and demon dad. Hilarum. I really want to shout out that I love the new killing scenes. Drac lurking around in them big ol' heels."
What do you mean big ol' heels? What do you mean big ol' heels?
Well, they love it, so.
My heels are cute, and they're stilettos, honey.
And them big ol', I mean, she really said, them big ol'
keep
chonky.
Big ol' opinions to yourself. Your big ol' descriptor words.
Oh, she does have a question. Question. Are the killing scenes recorded before or after the extermination?
Sherry, what do you think? How could they be before? How would you even know what they're going to wear?
I like the idea that there's two that are filmed. Like, it's like, okay, there's Satana and Anna both filmed the same death scene?
Like, do you think we leave the set of reality show, go to another location, film a scripted portion, and then come back and do it?
No breaks.
That's what we do. You're right.
In your big old heels.
And I get
my big old
heels. Yeah, I get my big old heels.
And I go back and forth
and
from set to set.
I walk over to that set, and then I walk back over. No, I get it. If you don't work in TV, like, you probably are curious about stuff like that. But yeah, and someone else asked about recently about the outfit.
This is multi-question. They have another. It says, previous seasons, they were in a completely different outfit, so it was safe to assume filmed way before. But this season, and some others, in parentheses, they're getting killed in the garment that they failed in.
Well, we did that last.
That has always been the dream, right? That is the continuity sweet spot, where they're killed in the outfit that they were exterminated
in. Well, it only makes sense, because they do the extermination, and then they get killed right after.
But TV magic is magic, and it is definitely like a discipline you must learn, and sometimes it's very expensive, and in other seasons we could or couldn't do that, but this has always been the way that we want it to be. The story continues right after the challenge, and they are killed in the look that they failed in, as they said.
That is brutal.
Sometimes reality is brutal.
Back in the beginning, I was sometimes afraid that they wouldn't come back. Like, they would get mad and not come back to film the death scene. So I'm like, film it when they first get to the show, because what if they get mad and quit or something? You have to have the footage of them dying, or else it's going to be like, they just disappeared, like Pinche.
Tyler writes, "Hi, my name is Tyler, and I'm writing y'all from..."
Hi, Tyler.
Good morning, America.
Good morning, Tyler. From Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Good morning. "As a listener of this podcast, I know y'all love, capital L-O-V-E, love, to make a reference, and I was obsessed with the Teletubby Toilet Bowl reference this episode. I was very disappointed, however, that none of the Season 5 competitors seemed to get the reference. Did they really have no reaction to it, or was it maybe just edited out? Because if it were me, I would have been gagged and probably quoting Kendra the rest of the day."
I mean, this was awesome, and this is why I say this before. I love us. We're not scared to do stupid, and this is stupid, and it's amazing, like, in the best way possible. And we love, like, a self-referencing moment, like, Not Tonight, and, like, you know, Toilet Bowl, and, you know, Hummus to the Fungus, I'm sure, is going to be in there, and who knows what else we'll discover this season. I do think some of the competitors recognize the reference. Maybe we didn't see it, like, on screen. I think that they were more preoccupied about the idea that, like, what is happening? Like, a toilet, a curse. Like, I could be cursed. Like, what does that mean? And I think that just, like, overrode all of their instincts. They didn't give a shit about Kendra. They were like, what's going to happen to me?
But what about me?
100%. You could see it in their face. They were like, what? They're thinking, like, what does it mean? Toilet bowl.
Did you like the Teletubby, huh?
Toilet bowl.
All right, that's all the time we have for questions today. But if you do have questions about any of the episodes that we have recapped, please write in to creatures@belaybrothersdragula.com and ask us your questions, and we will answer them on air.
Be sure to join us again in 7 days for the next episode of Postmortem of the Belay Brothers Dragula Season 5, Episode 4.
And remember to rate, subscribe, and review wherever you listen to the podcast.
The Boulay Brothers Creatures of the Night is hosted by the Boulay Brothers with their co-host and producer, Ian DeVogler. engineered and mixed by Carlos Bueno, with music by Neuron Spectre.